Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The most cynical amongst us may consider politicians nothing more than a bunch of blowhards. But when it comes to one important political issue in Massachusetts, blowing hard is exactly the point. We're talking about wind power. 5 years ago, Governor Deval Patrick set an ambitious goal for the state. He declared that by 2020, Massachusetts should develop enough wind-generated electricity to power 800,000 homes, and that one quarter of that wind power should come from turbines located on Massachusetts land. There's just 6 years to go to meet this ambitious goal, and how much farther does Massachusetts have to go? As WBUR's Bruce Gellerman reports, the answer is very far.
December 3rd, 2012 was an overcast day in Berkshire County, but that didn't dampen Governor Deval Patrick's enthusiasm. He came to this rural northwest corner of Massachusetts to mark the near completion of the Hoosac Wind Power Project, the largest in the state. 19 huge turbines built on two mountain ridges in the towns of Monroe and Florida, Mass.
You don't want them everywhere, but when you think about what they are doing in terms of a clean, renewable, and reliable source of electricity, it adds to the beauty. I think they're quite elegant.
But when it comes to wind power, beauty is in the eye and ear of the beholder. Opponents sued Hoosac, calling the 330-foot-tall turbines eyesores, loud and unhealthy. The lawsuits doubled the permitting time and the initial cost estimates. After 8 years of delay, the state's highest court settled the matter. The $90 million Hoosac wind farm was built. And Governor Patrick was finally able to claim Massachusetts was on its way to meeting his ambitious wind energy goal.
When I first took office, there were three wind turbines in the Commonwealth and 3 megawatts of wind energy capacity installed all throughout the state. Since then, Massachusetts has experienced one of the fastest rates of wind energy development in the whole nation. More than 30-fold increase in our wind energy capacity. In fact, more this year alone than in all previous years combined.
But in the years since Patrick gave this speech, only one new wind turbine has been built in Massachusetts. If the governor's ambitious goal is to be met, we'll need a dozen wind farms the size of Hoosac.
We're very pleased with how Hoosac has performed.
But Paul Kopelman, a spokesman for Iberdrola Renewables, which owns Hoosac, says the Spanish company has no plans to build more wind farms in Massachusetts, even though, under state law, utilities are required to buy an increasing share of their electricity from clean, renewable sources like wind. Enstar buys all of the electricity Hoosac produces. It's enough to power 10,000 homes a year, saving 100 million pounds of carbon dioxide annually compared to a fossil fuel plant.
Our fuel is free. The wind is always free. So what that enables us to do is deliver a fixed price source of power for as long as the wind is blowing. So there are very few variable costs to the operation of the facility.
Hoosac's 19 turbines make it by far the largest wind farm in the state. But if Virginia Irvine has her way, it'll also be the last.
To be honest, I thought that wind was really great myself.
That was until Boston-based First Wind announced plans to build a 10-turbine wind farm on a mountaintop in Brimfield, in Virginia Irvine's backyard. Crows fly overhead. In the distant forest, a barn owl hoots.
I moved here for the quiet, for the rural character, and to be able to go out my back door, put on my cross-country skis, and go into the woods.
The steady breeze on West Mountain caught First Wind's attention in 2010. Enough wind it estimated to power 15,000 homes. The company studied the site, held meetings with residents, and designed plans to erect the 400-foot-tall turbines less than a mile from Virginia Irvine's home. She fought back and helped organize the group called No Brimfield Wind. But it was profit, not protesters, that sealed First Wind's fate here. The company pulled the plug on the project when it discovered there wasn't enough wind on the mountain to make it financially feasible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we won. First Wind has not, you know, put in a project in Massachusetts. They only do big projects. They went up to Maine.
And Irvine went on to co-found Windwise, a statewide organization to help others fight against land-based wind projects. Irvine says she's not against wind farms. They're great in Texas and Iowa, too, but not Massachusetts, which ranks 35th in potential land-based wind, most along the coastline.
It doesn't fit. I mean, we're the fifth most densely populated state in the country, and wind turbines generate very little electricity. It takes 1,000 wind turbines to equal the Pilgrim nuclear plant.
There are 44 wind projects currently operating in Massachusetts. They generate less than 0.6% of the state's electricity needs, and just a fifth of the terrestrial wind energy goal set by the governor. By Virginia Irvine's calculations, there are 49 wind projects that never got off the ground. She calls them dead wind, and 13 projects are in limbo, still in the permitting process. Irvine says today there are more dead wind projects than operating ones in Massachusetts.
You just don't get that much bang for your buck with wind turbines.
I would disagree with that.
Catherine Finneran is a senior director with the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center. It oversees the state wind industry and site studies.
The fact that we have so many projects that are up and running successfully lends to the fact that we have the resources and the technology is viable here.
But Finneran offers no guarantee the governor's 2020 goal for wind energy will be met.
We do have projects in the pipeline. Whether or not those will move forward and how many and what capacity that will be is really an unknown. So it's really, I think it's hard to say at this point whether we'll meet that.
Today's wind turbines are not your quaint Dutch picture postcard models. They're high-tech, complex industrial machines with thousands of parts, weighing hundreds of tons, costing millions of dollars. A lot can go wrong. Catherine Finneran of the Clean Energy Center acknowledges the many challenges of the emerging wind industry.
There are going to be hiccups. So these small number of projects have encountered things like compliance issues, larger real estate development, financing concerns, some technical issues. So it's really all over the board and not one single issue.
That's Mount Wachusett right there. And then on the left side of that is where our turbines are.
Brian Allen is general manager of the Municipal Light Department in Princeton, Mass.
Boy, they're big.
Yeah, these are good size. And they're 260 feet tall.
Princeton had high hopes when it installed the two turbines in 2010. When the wind is blowing hard at 24 miles an hour, the turbines are designed to provide about 60% of the town's electricity at a fixed cost. Princeton Light borrowed $7 million, expecting the wind turbines would pay for themselves in a few years.
The idea looked perfect. We got a perfect location. We got plenty of wind. This should be a no-brainer.
Instead, it was a major headache. First, the price of electricity generated from natural gas plummeted, so Princeton couldn't find buyers for its more expensive wind energy. Then one of the turbine gearboxes suffered a catastrophic $800,000 failure. The town sued, but the company that built them went bankrupt. Today, Princeton has the second highest electricity rates in the state.
If it could go wrong, it went wrong. And so I'm not anti-wind. I hate to say this, but don't do it the way we did it.
We thought it was a slam dunk.
Steve Wiseman is a partner in Minuteman Wind. The wind project slated for the town of Savoy is the largest wind project on the drawing boards in Massachusetts. It was supposed to take 3 years. It's been 10.
And we're still working on it.
And Minuteman is still in limbo. It has most of the state approvals it needs and local support. What it lacks is a customer for its wind-generated electricity.
Without a long-term contract, you can't get financing. And without financing, you can't build the project.
Recently, Massachusetts utilities signed the largest long-term contracts for wind energy in the state's history. But Minuteman didn't get a single contract. Instead, the winning bids came from wind farms in New Hampshire and Maine. Massachusetts wind advocates say the premium for state-generated wind power is a small price to pay to cut greenhouse gases. They charge the reason they are not competitive is because the state's turbine permitting process is too costly. George Bachrach is head of the Environmental League of Massachusetts.
There's a joke, in fact, about permitting here in Massachusetts. Other states have permitting that is quick but uncertain. Others have a permitting process that's long but certain. We're unique. We're long and uncertain. So you don't know where you stand forever. If we're going to get this industry off the ground, we need a more predictable, quicker permitting process.
Over the past 5 years, three bills designed to streamline the wind turbine permitting process have been introduced in the legislature. All failed. Massachusetts' wind industry has had its legal trials, technical tribulations, and triumphs. But time is running out for Governor Patrick's ambitious goal for land-based turbines.
That report from WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, with help from WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. Well, let's turn now to one of the last voices you heard in that story, George Bachrach. He's president of the Environmental League of Massachusetts. He joins us now on the line. George, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Magda.
So we wanted to invite you back onto the show to sort of dig deeper into the ideas and issues that Bruce presented in his piece here. And first of all, let me just ask you straight out. It seems that we're, what, a little more than 20% of the way there regarding Governor Patrick's goal for land-based turbines in Massachusetts by 2020. Is it at all likely that we'll hit that goal in the next 6 years?
Well, I have no crystal ball, but I think it's inevitable. This is the future, and at a certain point, the pace will get accelerated. It's always most difficult for early adopters whenever a new industry begins. They laughed at the automobile, but nobody's driving horses and buggies.
Well, I wonder, though, because, I mean, Bruce pointed out to us that even for things as what seemingly straightforward as the permitting process, several bills on Beacon Hill have failed. And we heard earlier in the piece that folks like Virginia Irvine, who once was keen on the idea of wind power, she told us that the idea doesn't even fit for Massachusetts, that, we're the fifth most populated state in the country and wind turbines just don't generate enough electricity to make them worth it.
Well, with all due respect, she has a particular perspective that comes from her own backyard and her own desire not to have it in her backyard and therefore not in anybody's backyard. But the reality is Massachusetts is at the end of the pipeline. We are at the mercy of the oil and gas industry that can raise or lower prices, and we have nothing to say about it. When gasoline prices goes up at the pumps, for example, we don't apparently mind sending that money to ExxonMobil or to OPEC. But when we want to raise a few more pennies to fix transit in the state, we object. Well, the same is true of wind. We are at the mercy of others. And this gives us our own reliable energy source. And again, in terms of cost, which is sometimes an objection raised, gas prices have been low, but they're now climbing.
Well, let me ask you about that, though, because, I take your point about you say that it's inevitable, but I didn't hear you say that we're going to hit that goal by 2020. But for as long as things like natural gas prices do remain relatively low, even if they are starting to creep up, isn't it going to make it difficult for wind power to really generate enough momentum in terms of the number of turbines built if the owners of the turbines can't even get contracts to sell their power?
Well, you're exactly right, and I think Bruce's report touched on that, which is that if there's a cheaper form of energy, then getting financing for other forms of energy is always more difficult. However, the state has made a decision that there are broader elements that go into the cost consideration. We have coastal flooding issues. We have, adverse effects on our economy. If you look at what Hurricane Sandy did, Superstorm Sandy did in New York and New Jersey, there's a real cost involved when that hits. So if you don't deal with climate issues, you wind up paying the piper in other ways. And for that reason, the state, as a matter of public policy, has put certain regulations in place that require utilities to purchase a sufficient amount of renewable energy that will hopefully allow that industry to develop. And over time, as any early adopter finds, costs come down.
Right. I wonder, do you think that the focus, Bruce in his piece was talking about land-based turbines. Do you think that Massachusetts might be better off sort of easing back its goal on land-based turbines and redoubling its effort to get any sort of offshore wind farm up and running?
Well, I don't think one precludes the other. I do think we need to move much more quickly in both areas. The Cape Wind project is an the poster boy for how not to do this in terms of a process, which is to say that it has been so delayed and, by adversaries who file one frivolous lawsuit after another, the most recent of which four lawsuits were consolidated into one and struck down. Cape Wind will be built. It should have been built a decade ago. And the federal government is setting aside ocean areas 10 times the size of Cape Wind south of Martha's Vineyard. And if we can develop the deep water technology to put those turbines in place, it'll be a much larger offshore wind farm. But we still need onshore wind.
Yeah, so George, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're running down on time here, and I do want to ask you one last question. It seems as if early adopters for land-based wind technology in Massachusetts are facing something of a catch-22, that in a lot of places that they've wanted to put up turbines, they faced local resistance, so maybe the populace as a whole isn't seeing the benefits of more wind power. But, one has to come after the other, that popular support won't come unless more turbines go up. Do you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, well, we can certainly try and do a better job of convincing folks of the benefits of wind, although I think everybody understands really the benefits of wind. It comes down to, a bit of NIMBYism, frankly. There is no such thing as progress without it affecting somebody, and it affects somebody. But there's a greater good here in terms of our energy independence, in terms of stopping greenhouse gas emissions that will lead to flooding. There's a whole slew in public health issues like childhood asthma. So there's a whole slew of reasons to go to renewable energy, not the least of which is it's created 80,000 new jobs here in the Commonwealth, fastest growing segment of our economy.
Yeah.
So we will get onshore wind as well as offshore wind. We just need to resolve the siting issue that is fair to everybody.
Well, George Bacharach is president of the Environmental League of Massachusetts. George, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And then we've got an interactive map of Massachusetts wind projects at WBUR.org. Check it out. But stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.